So as I said yesterday, that we've already established the basic Vedic paradigm of the mind and its workings, and now we are going to go into sharper detail. So it's already been explained that material desires are spread like seeds throughout the karana deha, or the root false ego, the causal body. For the seeds to sprout and grow, the linga and stula shariras are needed. In other words, the subtle mental body in which our desires can be contemplated and can take shape, subtle objects appear, subtle plans appear. And then in the stula shrira, of course, we go from thinking, feeling is also taking place subtly, because as we contemplate, like Krishna says in the Gita, we become attached. So that is taking place in the mind. The mind starts to be obsessed. That's a common word we hear today. But the mind starts to obsess on sense objects. The mind can't shake free of them. And then that leads to the follow through on the gross platform. The willing of action, that I have to do something about this. I have this desire, it's taken root in my mind and grown up. It's pushing me, so now I have to do something. So that's already been established. Now we want to, as I said, bring into sharper focus this process. So the appearance of material desire in the mind, that first appearance, is called vasana, as we shall see from a remark Srila Prabhupada made in a Bhagavad Gita lecture on 29 July 1973 in London. Quote, similarly, if one desires that I shall become a devotee of Krishna, that is natural desire. But when I desire to lord over the material nature and forget my service to Krishna, that is called vasana, that is material desire, abhilas. So we have to give up these material desires, then it is bhakti. So we have a full account of vasana from a verse spoken by Jad Bharat in Srimad Bhagavatam 5.11.5. So I want to read the entire verse to you, including the Sanskrit, so you can hear the word vasana. It's the second word. Sa vasanatma vishyayo paryakto guna pravaha vikrita surushatma ibratpritan namabhi rupam vedam antar bahishtvam chaparaistanot. And this means, because the mind is absorbed in desires, vasanas, for pious and impious activities, it is naturally subjected to the transformations of lust and anger. In this way, it becomes attracted to material sense enjoyment. In other words, the mind is conducted by the modes of goodness, passion, and ignorance. There are 11 senses and 5 material elements, and out of these 16 items, the mind is the chief. Therefore, the mind brings about birth in different types of bodies among demigods, human beings, animals, and birds. When the mind is situated in a higher or lower position, it accepts a higher or lower material body. So this verse outlines a series of psychological phenomena. It culminates in the soul taking another birth. So now I want to take a little time to analyze this series. It's a series of five parts, all mentioned in this verse. So first of all, the material mind is referred to in this verse, the actual quality that makes the mind material as opposed to a spiritual mind. The material mind is guna pravaha. It is conducted by the three modes of material nature. The spiritual mind is not. We explained that yesterday. The spiritual mind is situated in Turiya, Vasudev Sattva, above the three modes of nature. So the material mind is conducted by the three modes of nature. That state, again, is called guna pravaha. So each individual's mind is subject to a unique combination of the three modes. This is individuality in the material world. That each of us has our own mind, and our own mind is subject to its own particular combination or flavor of tastes under the material modes of nature. Everyone has a special, unique mix of modes that work in their mind. Of course, there might, we'll find persons with very similar tastes, but ultimately, because spiritually we're unique individuals, so similarly, materially, are the coverings that we get when we come into this material world, they are also ultimately unique to us in the finest analysis. So that's the first point. The material mind is guna pravaha, conducted by the three modes of material nature. The second point is that the effect of the modes upon the mind is understood by the mind's constant agitation and restlessness. While consoling his mother as she grieved over the death of Hiranyaksha, Hiranyakashipu nicely summed up this effect in Srimad Bhagavatam 7.2.24. He told her that the soul is always avikalapumam, which means changeless. But when the mind is agitated by the gunas, the soul is bewildered and sees itself undergoing material transformations. In the verse quoted above, Jad Bharat uses the word vikrita, which is actually a word we've come across before. Vikara, vikrita. We've already come across this word. It means transformation. So Jad Bharat uses the word vikrita to indicate the transformations of mind that are induced by guna pravaha. And this comes back to that very important point we made before about the difference between Vaishnava philosophy and Mayavad philosophy. And it is even acknowledged by a demon like Hiranyakashipu that while the soul, the spiritual entity itself, is avikalapuman, is changeless, the mind or its consciousness can be agitated by the gunas, or in other words, become guna pravaha. You see, so the consciousness is therefore subject to transformation. It's subject to influence. So, and that, of course, as we've already heard previously, depends on our attitude towards the Supreme Lord. If we have a devotional attitude towards Him, if we are naturally attracted to hearing about Him, serving Him, chanting His holy name, remembering Him, absorbing our minds in Him, then by coming under His spiritual nature, which is pure, which is naikamatma, which means not touched by the modes of nature, yes, then we will not be guna pravaha, we will not be agitated by the influence of the material modes. But if our devotional attitude towards the Lord is weak, is whimsical, if we let our minds wander away from His lotus feet, from His devotional service, and go into material things, then yes, we will quickly come under the control of the three modes of material nature, and then the mind will become restless, agitated. So, what does that mean? What is restlessness? What is that all about? So that's point number three, the next point. That restlessness of mind is the fertile soil by which the seeds of desire embedded within the karana deha, remember the causal body, the root false ego, the root material identity, which is actually in avyakta, it is actually rooted in the unmanifest state. In other words, even when we are pulled into the body of Mahavishnu at the end of the cosmic manifestation, so the sthula sharira, the gross body, is dissolved. Even the subtle body is dissolved, because to be merged into Mahavishnu means to be merged in the state of dreamless sleep. So there's no dream activity, there's no subtle body activity going on. But still, there's a root conception of false ego, avidya, ignorance, which is simply experienced as that unconscious state that we're experiencing while we're merged into Mahavishnu. It's called susupti, the state of dreamless sleep. That's the primordial condition of false ego. That is, as we shall see in a few moments when we look at these diagrammical explanations, which actually are coming from Srila Rupa Goswami in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, that is what he means by avidya. He's simply calling it avidya, ignorance, primordial ignorance. That avidya is this karana deha, this false ego state. So, within the karana deha, there are seeds of desires. Seeds means, in Sanskrit, bija. You see that word there too. So they blossom in the linga sharira, or in the subtle body. And this is what we're experiencing at night. Every night, when we dream, we fall asleep. We first go into dreamless sleep. And then gradually out of that dreamless state, dreams appear. You see? We first enter into primordial false ego, and then the seeds, they begin to sprout into the mind, and they sprout in the form of dreams, which are passionate yet subtle manifestations of desire. The objects of desire appear before us. The activities of fulfilling these desires, or trying to fulfill these desires, we find ourselves engaged in. But it's all, of course, within the mind only. The gross senses are inert. They're not active. So when we look in the Monier Williams Sanskrit dictionary, the word vasana is translated as infusing. This is one definition among several given. So the word infuse means to put into or introduce, as if by pouring. Just like if I had a glass and I would pour the water from this glass, so the water would go into the glass, and as the water kept pouring, then you would see the water filling up, and the water would be filling up in the glass, but there would be still this effect of more water pouring into the water that's there. You see? You could see that flow of water going in to the water that's there as the water is getting deeper. And of course, that's increasing the volume of water. So that pouring into, that is one way of defining vasana. So hence, the vasanas are waves of desire that pour out of the subconscious into the restless conscious or semi-conscious mind. By semi-conscious mind, we mean the dreaming mind, but also into the conscious mind. Because we as human beings, being very passionate, we also dream while we're awake. We're very fond of you know, speculating and daydreaming and fantasizing even while we're so-called awake. So this is more or less dreaming while we're awake. And in that state of mind, then too, vasanas, these subconscious desires, can make their appearance. So another gloss on vasanas and their effects is found in the purport to Srimad Bhagavatam 6.15.24. Quote, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti writes as follows in his commentary, and here's a long prose Sanskrit statement which we will not bother reading, but the translation is, at night one dreams of tigers and snakes, and while dreaming he actually sees them. But as soon as the dream is broken, they no longer exist. Similarly, the material world is a creation of our mental concoctions. We have come to this material world to enjoy material resources. And by mental concoction, we discover many, many objects of enjoyment because our minds are absorbed in material things. This is why we receive various bodies. According to our mental concoctions, we work in various ways, desiring various achievements. And by nature, and the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, karmana daiva netrena, we get the advantages we desire. Thus, we become more and more involved with material concoctions. This is the reason for our suffering in the material world. By one kind of activity, we create another, and they are all products of our mental concoctions. So, to continue this, that was quite interesting, but we can, before stopping to explain, we can even shed more light on this by another statement by Srila Prabhupada that he gave in Srimad Bhagavatam class 2, verse 9 of chapter 6 of canto 7. This was in Vrindavan on 11 December 1975. So Srila Prabhupada said, vasana. Therefore, we have to become vasana-less. Without any vasana means without any material desires. Vasana cannot, it is therefore not actually to make it null and void, but to make it purified. That is the aim of human life, to purify our desires. That purification is possible by Krishna consciousness. Sarva padi vinirmuktam tatparadvina nirmalam. If you simply desire how to serve Krishna, then that is really desirelessness. So, some of you here participated in the Maha Sudarshan Gyana Yajna, which we are no longer doing because we no longer have time for that. Now, very busy again with the school activities. But you'll remember, because you did it, so three of you here did it, so you'll remember that there was the red ring of red lotus petals, 8 lotus petals, and on these lotus petals were inscribed the syllables Om Namo Bhagavate Narayanaya. So, or it was Om Namo Narayanaya. Yeah, 8 syllable mantra. Om Namo Narayanaya. Yes. 8 petals, 8 syllables. So I explained how these 8 petals simultaneously stand for the Astapuris, the 8 cities of dreams, or the 8 subtle realms that we visit in our dream state at night. And on a deeper level, the most fundamental level, they are the Astagunas, they are the eight qualities of the liberated soul. And there was an interesting correlation between these 2 8. For example, in the pedal for the pranas, so the pedal for the pranas is where the material intelligence resides, and also the pranas. The pranas are life forces or life airs that work the senses under the control of the material intelligence. The material intelligence conceives of plans for gratifying the desires of the senses and uses the pranas to engage the senses in activities of sense gratification. So that is the station of pranas. But underneath that was the astaguna, one of the eight qualities, called sarvakam. That for liberated, satchasankalpa. Satchasankalpa, that for a liberated soul, whatever he wants is granted by Lord Krishna. Satya is a name of Krishna, means the absolute truth. And sankalpa is another word for desire. It means what we want in the mind. There's two terms that basically summarize the functions of the mind, the dualistic function of the mind, sankalpa and vikalpa. The mind accepts and the mind rejects. So sankalpa means the acceptance of the mind. So the mind is accepting, for example, certain sense objects as being desirable. The mind, you see that comes into matters of taste. Very prevalent in the material world, especially among the younger generation. So there are different styles of dress that different groups of young people wear in order to proclaim what tribe they belong to, what youth tribe they belong to. So when I was a kid, there was, for example, the mods, the rockers, the beatniks, and a little later the hippies. So the mods used to dress very stylishly. That came from England, basically. They were known for wearing very thin ties and dressing up very stylishly and riding motorbikes with many headlamps on the front. These motor scooters, actually. Whereas the rockers, they had their hair greased back and they wore black leather jackets. And they rode around on these big motorcycles with the big engines and they were real tough guys. And then the hippies, the beatniks, they were kind of crummy looking and, and they were artists and poets and usually had like a little beard or something, goatee. And then later came the hippies with the long hair. Now today, I don't know what you've got. You've got still got punks and techno freaks and grunge and stoners and all kinds of new versions of wet stool, dry stool. It's just same old thing. But they just rearrange the paraphernalia somewhat and give it a different name and try to think that they're doing something that was never done before, but it's punak punak chavit chavinam. They're simply chewing the tube. All those things have already been done. And they're being done again and again and again. So anyway, these youth tribes, so they dress up and they take on certain habits, lifestyles, certain music to advertise that I belong to this group or that group. So this is exactly what Srila Prabhupada is referring to as mental concoction. This is all produced out of mental concoction. Some people getting together and conceiving, yes, let's do like this, let's act like this. And they create a little world for themselves, and of course, material nature responds accordingly. And also according to their mental concoction, then they'll be under a combination of modes of nature, and appropriate vasanas, or desires, will appear in the mind, appropriate to that particular standard of life they've set for themselves. Like Srila Prabhupada writes here that according to our mental concoctions, we work in various ways, desiring various achievements, and by nature and the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we get the advantages we desire. Thus, we. Anyway, he was saying that according to a higher or lower, somewhere here, he was saying according to a higher or lower state of mind, we get higher or lower bodies. By one kind of activity, we create another, and they are all products of our mental concoction. Yes. So anyway, so under the particular mix of modes of nature, then we become subject to... You see, people who are very, very low, very ignorant, very tamasic, then... what kind of desires will pop into their minds? Very, very low class, vicious, very nasty. Things we don't need to mention. I could mention some things I know about, but it would be very disgusting. But anyway, people, particularly in Kali Yuga, there are always new lows opening up. You see, as people accept lower and lower modes of nature in which to live, then the mind seems to have an unlimited capacity, just an endless capacity for creating newer and newer concoctions of how to gratify the senses under very nasty conditions. So in this way, the state of mind degrades, and as a result, then according to that state, material nature responds by giving us an appropriate body. You see? So in this way we can go from human form of life down to dog or worm or something even unimaginably abominable. AIDS virus or something like that. You see? All in one jump, it's possible. All in one jump, one can become so degraded by the activities one performs in a single human life. So, but yes, the point is at the bottom of it all, again we mentioned satya sankalpa. For liberated soul, his sankalpa, he has desires too. In other words, in his mind, there are things that he wants to accomplish. Certainly, Srila Prabhupada had plans that he was meditating on. Even before he came to America, he was remembering the order of his spiritual master. He was living at... the Samadhi Mandir of Srila Rupa Goswami, and he was meditating very, very deeply on how to fulfill the order of his spiritual master. So this is an example of sankalpa, the mind wanting to achieve something. And so because liberated soul like Srila Prabhupada depends only upon satya, the supreme absolute truth for fulfillment of desires, therefore his desires are really fulfilled. Therefore Srila Prabhupada, even at an advanced age, in his 70s, when most people are too feeble to really do anything, you see, in their 70s, what are most people doing? They're sitting in a rocking chair, sitting in a wheelchair, laying in a bed with all kinds of tubes coming out of their arms, or, you know, just doddering about in the garden, you know, doing simple things, But Srila Prabhupada started this amazing worldwide mission, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, because he had a desire, but that desire he placed at the lotus feet of Sri Krishna. He did not place at the thorny feet of mental speculation. You see, this is what materialistic people do. We have desires, so we place these desires we give them over to mental speculation. All right, I have this desire, so let's figure out how I can satisfy it in my own independent way. You see? And the result of that is that we simply come under the control of material nature. And our activities generate karma, and we do not satisfy those desires. No. We just get entangled in the complexities of material nature. We create klesha, it's a word up here, means suffering. And at the end of our life, we die, our desires still unsatisfied, and those desires dragging us onward to our next birth. But that birth will be taken under the conditions that we have created for ourselves by the karma of trying to fulfill those desires that we didn't fulfill in this lifetime. You see? So if you try to fulfill your desires by acting like a dog in this lifetime, then in the next lifetime you can go on trying to satisfy the desires in the body of a dog. But you'll still not satisfy them. In this way, the living entity is dragged round and round and round the cycle of samsara, always trying to fulfill these desires which he never succeeds in fulfilling, because desire can only be fulfilled by the Lord. So that is the meaning of satya sankalpa. And another one of these asta gunas is sarvakam. All of our desires are automatically satisfied by the Lord. In other words, that's kam refers to material desires, particularly lusty desires. So a liberated person is not agitated by lusty desires. Why is that? Because at the very root, that need, that prayojan, which in material consciousness is known as a lusty desire, but at the very spiritual root of it, that need is satisfied by the Lord. Again, because the liberated soul, he places himself under the shelter of the Lord's lotus feet. And you'll find the letter, there's at least one letter I know, and undoubtedly Srila Prabhupada answered this question multiple times in this way, but it comes to mind one letter in which a devotee wrote to Prabhupada how to deal with lusty desires. What should I do? I find my mind becoming disturbed by lusty thoughts. And Srila Prabhupada's reply was, you simply go before Krishna, the deity. Go before the deity of Lord Krishna and place your mind at his lotus feet. And Prabhupada wrote, because Krishna is the most expert at lusty affairs. You see, we are not at all expert. We are just foolish, conditioned souls trying to imitate Krishna. So you have a natural attraction to lusty affairs because you are part and parcel of Krishna. But do not pursue this desire in your own independent matter. Just go before Krishna and place those thoughts, place those desires at his lotus feet. You see? My dear Lord, I am disturbed by these desires, but I understand that you are the most expert in these affairs. So I beg you, please, at the spiritual root, please satisfy my desires. So if we go before Krishna this way, Prabhupada said, then he will purify us of those lusty desires. He will step into our heart. And by his presence there, then at the level of prayojan, the level of need of the soul, there our desires will be addressed. Because what do we need? We need Krishna. So we need to pray to him sincerely. so that he will make his appearance in our heart. So, if we do not do that, as already explained in the beginning, if we're lackadaisical about Krishna consciousness, only half serious, not very concentrated, not very disciplined, letting the mind wander, the mind will become captivated by the external energy. That's certainty. And then we'll become agitated, guna prabaha, by the modes of nature. That's a certainty. And then we'll become subject to these vasanas, these desires coming up from deep in the heart, which we think about, then we feel, and then they take they assume uncontrollable power over us. We have to act upon them. And that's called karma. And of course then karma breeds reaction. So, in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Sri Guru Goswami has given an in-depth explanation of how sinful desires arise in the mind, what reactions such desires foment, and how devotional service rids us of both the desires and their reactions. So, in the Nectar of Devotion, as far as I know, Srila Rupa Goswami does not use the word vasana, which we found in that Srila Prabhupada used and is explained in Srimad Bhagavatam and in the Srimad Bhagavatam verse, and also in a commentary by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. But Srila Rupa Goswami uses the word bija, which means seed of desire, which is the same thing. It is a synonym for vasana. And he says that bija arises from avidya. Avidya is the primal ignorance that encases the soul as the karana deha, the causal body. So, we have here, I'll explain. You see here four diagrams, and on the back there's a fifth diagram. And these are some of the explanations of the same thing, but in progressively more detail, so that hopefully you'll get a very clear understanding of Rupa Goswami's explanation of how sinful desire arises in the mind and what reactions these desires bring about. So first, this is the simplest explanation. How klesha appears. Klesha means suffering. There's a term, klesha traya. Threefold miseries. We have miseries arising from our own adhyatma, means our own mind and body, our own self. If you just sit in the same position in a class for a few minutes, you start to feel uncomfortable. You see? Try it. Just purposefully sit in one position, unmoving, for 5-10 minutes. And then you'll start to become disturbed. You see? You'll get an urge. I've got to move my leg. I've got to move my arm. I can't stay in this position. So this is an example of adhyatmika klesh. Without any external interference, our own bodies and minds give us trouble. You see? Without any impulses even coming from outside. They themselves are enough to give us all kinds of suffering. But on top of that, then there's adidaivika klesh and adibhautika klesh. So adidaivika klesh, daiva means by arrangement of God or demigods. Sometimes the term in the West, an act of God is used. Some television announcer might say, barring an act of God, we'll be here tomorrow, same time, same station, same place.
You see. So please tune in. Yes, so an act of God. So there might be a heat wave. It might become too hot, insufferably hot, or too insufferably cold, or there might be flood, or something like that. Or pestilence, just like in the Middle Ages, some 2/3 of the population of Europe was wiped out in a few years by the plague, the Black Plague. It was an unknown disease. Now it's known as bubonic plague, but at that time they had no idea what it was. They didn't know that it was being spread by rats and by their own uncleanliness. They weren't very frequent bathers in those days, so, and quite low degraded habits. So as a result, the people of Europe were prime victims of this Adi Daivika Klesh, this wide spreading of this deadly disease, which killed off 2/3 of the population. And then on the other side, Adi Bhautika Klesh, that we get miseries from other living entities, just like around this time of day, a little, in a few minutes, the mosquitoes will be coming out more and more. And we'll have to pass around the Lumine bottle, because they'll start to pinch our skin and cause us to itch. So other living entities cause us misery. So those are external to us. Adi Daivika, Adi Bhautika. But within ourselves also, there is built-in klesha. So how, where does all of this come from? We've given apparently three causes, but what are the real causes? Why are we in this situation where we have to suffer threefold kinds of misery? So this is the simple A, B, C, D explanation. First explanation, Rupa Goswami says. So this is lesson number one to help us understand. That first there's avidya. This is our first qualification or disqualification for suffering. Is that we have to be in avidya. We have to be in ignorance of ourselves as eternal servants of Krishna. We have to be covered by this false ego conception of myself as being something other than partner and parcel of Krishna. And then furthermore, identifying with a subtle mind and a gross body, and thinking of myself as a material entity. This amounts to avidya. And so when one is in avidya, then one is, yes, one's state of mind is, as explained, guna pravaha. Then one is subject to the agitations, the constant agitations of the modes of nature. The mind is always restless, and then the restless mind is the perfect place for these bijas, these seeds of sinful desire, to start to grow. You see? The restless mind is just like if you want to have a nice... here in Mayapur, I know grihasthas who have very nice gardens over in the Grihasthapara area. So one gets nice black soil and cow dung, and you know, makes a very fertile garden bed, and then plants the seeds in it. You see, and then one can get very, very rich, ripe tomatoes and watermelons and so on and so forth. You see, very, very tasty. So similarly, when the mind is restless, that is the fertile ground, that's the black earth. That's the black earth, or the fertilized earth for the implantation of these bijas. And then these bijas, yes, they sprout. They grow. They grow into what? Papam means sinful activities. We have to act on these sinful desires that grow up in the mind. So papa means the sinful act, and suffering means the pal, the fruit, the result of that activity, klesha, suffering. So this is a very simple, what do they say, no-brainer explanation. But now take it to a bit more sophisticated level. There are two reactions actually to papam, sin, both involving suffering, klesha, ultimately. So one type of, from the sinful actions, papam, sinful actions, there is aparabdha karma and parabdha karma. Unparabdha karma means unmanifest reaction, and parabdha karma means manifest reaction. So this is simple to understand. Prabhupada gave a very simple explanation of what this means, parabdha karma. What's parabdha karma? Look in the mirror. There's your parabdha karma, your material body. There it is, manifest. That's the result of what you've done in your past lives. It's come to this, that you've got this body. And the body that you get in your next life, hopefully will be the body of a Manjari in Goloka Vrindavan, hopefully. That will be the result of pure devotional service in this lifetime, which is not karma, of course. That is the result, naish karma. There is no karma, but rather it is the fruit of love of Godhead. There's a karma pal, and then there's a prema bhakti pal. Pal means fruit. So to get a material body, that's karma pal. So if we were not such fixed up devotees, then maybe we'll find ourselves in Indraloka in the next life, or some heavenly material situation. Because that's what happens when devotional service is not pure. Then it breeds punya karma, pious material results. So if we wake up in our next life in a demigod body, so that's still karma pal. It's punya karma pal. It's pious sinful pious sinful reaction, I could say that. Because there's still sinfulness. Prabhupada actually explained. He said even Lord Brahma, the fact that he's in this material world, the fact that he has a material body, means that he's sinful. Yeah? So everyone in this material world, Krishna says, from the highest living entity down to the lowest, is subject to the three modes of material nature, which means is subject to the action and reaction of their sinful affairs in this material world. Because sinfulness means what? To be attracted to the modes of nature. Karana karana kartavyam hetu prakriti ruchate purusha sukha dukkanam bhuktipe hetu ruchate. So the cause, karana karana kartavyam, that's arranged by material nature, but the sufferings, the enjoyments, what we're suffering, what we're enjoying in this world, that is our responsibility. Because bhunte prakriti jagunan, we are trying to enjoy the modes of material nature. We are not supposed to do that. These modes are not ours to enjoy, but we are trying, and therefore we are being actually punished by material nature for that. So everyone, even in the heavenly planets, they're sinful. So parabdha karma means this physical body which we are now suffering or enjoying, or suffering and enjoying. And aparabdha means, you see, in any human life, If one is a karmi, one lives out 100 years of, or 90 years, or 80 years, or 70 years, human life in material activities. That means that every moment we're creating karma. Practically with every breath we take. That's why, you know, there's one religion in India, the Jains. And the sadhus of the Jain religion, they wear masks over their mouths. Why is that? Because they're afraid of breathing insects or microorganisms into their nose and their mouth and killing them. Because they know that they'll suffer sinful reactions for that. And when they walk, they have a broom, some kind of ceremonial broom, and they'll sweep in front of themselves to try to sweep away living entities so they won't step on them. But this is, and they only eat fruit that has begun to rot, that's, you know, fallen from the tree and has begun to rot, because they think if you eat a fully ripened fruit, there's life there. But unfortunately, why is a fruit rotting? It's because it's become infested with microorganisms, you see. So they eat partially rotten fruit. That means with every bite, they're consuming all these microbes that are there making that fruit brown, you see. They're swallowing them and killing them. So the a living entity who's not living his life for service of Krishna is responsible for every sinful act, which means every pain, every suffering that he inflicts on another living entity, no matter how insignificant, he's responsible. So just imagine throughout 24 hours of the day how many living entities we cause suffering to, and we have to pay for every one of them. So that means that these sinful reactions, they stock up, 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 they stock up. Unimaginably so. So we have an inestimable quantity of potential sinful reactions stored, again, deep down in the karana deha, the causal body. It's the body which is the reason why we're here. So, these reactions, we have to live them out. And that's why we have to take birth again and again and again and again and again. And no one can trace out how many births we have to take, especially if one goes on living in ignorance, and even though he has already a gigantic mountain of sinful reactions, potential sinful reactions on his shoulders, he goes on generating more. You see? So this is the meaning of nitya body, eternally conditioned. The living entity, there's just no end. There's just no end to it. There's so many potential reactions that gradually come due. You see? They gradually come due. In this life, the next life, the life after that, the life after that. In time, they gradually come due. And this is all karmana daivanetrena. This is all under the watchful eye of the Lord. He's watching everything that we do, and also under His jurisdiction, under His order, this or that or the other reaction is also being allowed to fructify at this or that time, this or that place. So, parabdha, aparabdha, parabdha. Unmanifest reaction, manifest reaction. And then, looking at this even more closely, we go over here, number three. Furtherance of sinful reaction. That out of this adparabdha, there are actually two
results that accrue. You see, unmanifest reaction will, as I said, become manifest reaction in time, prarabdha karma. We will get a body, if one is a karmi in this, like here in Bengal, all over India, Bengalis are known to love to eat fish. I mean, it's just, there's just something about Bengalis and fish. So they have special recipes, and you'll see on the trucks here in Bengal, they often decorate the trucks with fish, pictures of fish, because just to show that it's a symbol of pride. Ami Bangla, I'm a Bengali. Therefore I'm decorating my truck with a fish. See, much. So if one is in the human form of life but eating fish, so he's stocking up uprabdha karma, which is going to lead him to take not just one, but perhaps a whole succession of fish births. You see? Just like fish is one thing. In America, they like to eat cows. So there's that statement that if you eat the flesh from just one cow, then you have to take as many births. You have to take birth, what is that? As a cow to be slaughtered as many times as there are hairs on the body of that one cow that you ate flesh from. But people in America are not eating simply one time flesh from one cow. They're every day, two times, three times a day, going to McDonald's or Burger King or Wendy's or whatever it is, and eating hamburgers from different cows, and they're proudly advertising over 10 billion sold. You see, so many millions and millions of cows slaughtered in order to provide you with your sense credit. So it's just unimaginable how much uprabdha karma is there that will mature into prarabdha karma, birth after birth after birth after birth after birth, as fish that have to be caught and cooked and eaten, or cows that have to be slaughtered and turned into hamburgers or whatever. But there is another side to aparabdha reaction, and that is kutam. That is the increase of sinful propensity, which will also result in the increase of suffering. So what does that mean? So take, for example, stealing. So stealing is a sinful act. So I do it once. I'm a young boy, and I'm with my friends, and we get into a kind of rascal mood, and we see an opportunity when no one's looking to... There's a house. We know the occupants they've gone out, and we know a way to slip into the house. We see a window is a little bit open, and one of our friends is small enough that he can just fit through, and then from the inside he can open the window, and we can all get in, and then we can go in there and take things, put them in our pockets, and run out. So, as young boys, we do that once. And you know, there's a thrill to it. There's certainly a thrill, but there's also guilty feelings and paranoia. You spend the next 2-3 weeks really nervous that, you know, suddenly you're going to be accused. The police are going to come to your house. Your fingerprints have been found. You know, you imagine all these things, that you're going to get busted. But nothing happens. See, some weeks go by, nothing happens. And all you remember was the fun. It was a lot of fun, you see. So that one sinful act, stealing, then creates this kutam, this sinful propensity. Yeah, man, that was a lot of fun. We broke into this house and we took this and we took that and we took some other things, and you know, next time we could take more. I mean, next time we could take some really valuable things. I mean, they had a stereo DVD player in there. They had computer, laptop computer. They had this and that. We could have taken those things and sold them on the black market and made some money. So one starts to like this type of activity. One starts to become attached to it. And gradually this one may become a thief. One may dedicate himself simply to thieving as a result. And this will certainly lead to an increase of suffering, because what happens to thieves sooner or later? They do get caught, you see. And because they have invested all their intelligence, they've invested so much time and energy and intelligence and skill into thieving, after a while they don't know anything else. They can't imagine. They become thieves, you know, just like a person goes 12 years to medical school and becomes a doctor, and that's his profession. He's a doctor. And if he makes a mistake and gets sued for malpractice and loses the lawsuit and his license is taken away, he can no longer practice medicine, then he's like a ghost. I mean, he knows how to transplant livers, and but he can't do it, you see. So he has to work in a car wash. He's got a doctor's karma. He's got the ability to be a doctor, but he's got to work in a car wash. So he's you can imagine such a person. He's they're really frustrated. Sometimes it happens. But in a more criminal sense, the same thing goes on. People become professional criminals. And if one becomes a professional criminal, one can pretty much be sure that one is going to get caught and do time in prison, spend years behind bars sometimes. But one can't give it up, because that's one's propensity, kutam. He doesn't know what else to do. He can't get any satisfaction from doing anything else. His whole life energy flows in that direction. That's his adharma, not his dharma. That's his adharma. To be a thief, to be a robber, to be a whatever, you see. So this is another result of the abharapta karma, a sinful disposition. And then finally, diagram number 5, we get a complete picture.
Number 4 we didn't.
Hmm? Oh, we didn't do number 4? Oh, sorry.
Thank you.
Alright, so number 4, we get 4 stages of bondage from what we've learned before. So, starting again, papam, which leads to aparabdha, unmanifest sinful reaction. And from this aparabdha comes parabdha, sinful reaction, in the form of you're going to get a material body. But at the same time, psychologically speaking, we can say this is a gross reaction, that you're going to get some kind of gross physical body. But then psychologically speaking, mentally speaking, kutam, you develop a sinful propensity. You are cultivating by this papam certain habits, certain repeated modes of behavior, sinful behavior, and you become, well, as we've already stated, addicted to that. You think you can't live without that. And so then, coming out of this kutam, this propensity for sinfulness, then the bijas keep coming. The papa bija, the sinful desires, they keep manifesting, keep growing, and resulting in more papa, more sinful activities. So here you see a cycle. You see? Stage number one, the sinful act leads to stage number two, that there's a potential reaction that is immediately bred by the act. As soon as you do the act, already the aparabdha is in place. Already that you are ensured that you will get a sinful reaction. It's already subtly there. And then the reaction comes in two ways. A gross way, parabdha karma, material body, and subtly in the mind, kutam, sinful propensity is set up, which is the breeding ground for more bijas, more sinful desires, which result in more sinful activities, and around and around and around and around. So now, taking all this together, then we get the complete picture that Śrīla Rūpa Gosvāmī gives. Yes, and this is a kind of chakra or cycle. So, in the background, there is avidya. And the avidya, that primordial ignorance, is the unlimited storehouse already of so many bijas. So they appear in a mind that is agitated by the modes of nature. They result thinking, feeling, willing in sinful action, which results in aparabdha, unmanifest reaction, which then goes in two directions. You get the parabdha karma, manifest reaction in the form of this body, which is subject to three kinds of klesha, but then also a subtle reaction, kuta, sinful disposition, which keeps the wheel turning. We go back to bija. You see, more and more bijas keep pouring into the mind, which become the impetus for more and more sinful reactions, which create more and more potential reactions of parabdha, which lead to more and more material bodies, and which increase our sinful disposition, which keep, in other words, keep our minds absorbed simply in materialistic affairs. So this is Rupa Goswami's, I think it's very cogent, very clear, easy to follow a presentation of these psychology behind sinful activity and sinful reaction. So Śrīla Rūpa Gosvāmī describes the first cause of suffering, papam, in all its subheadings. Then he goes on to describe the second cause of suffering, bija, sinful desire. He quotes the Vishnu Dutas from Srimad Bhagavatam 6.2.17, who explain that many processes can neutralize the reactions of sinful activities. What are those reactions again? Aparabdha and parabdha. Parabdha leading to klesha, suffering in a gross body, and aparabdha leading to kuta, a sinful mentality, sinful disposition. So there are many processes that can neutralize these reactions, you see, by yoga, You can stop your sinful activities. By yoga, you can even suspend the movements of the mind in trance so that one is no longer contemplating doing bad things. But only devotional service can uproot sinful desire, which is the cause of sinful activity. Srila Prabhupada elaborates by citing Ajamil. In spite of his strict performance of brahminical duties, sinful desires remained in Ajamil's heart and caused him to succumb to sinful life. Do you all know the story of Ajamil? You've all read this. So you know that he was a very nice, qualified, young Brahmin man who had a very beautiful wife, who he was religiously married to, and he had a very good upbringing, good education. He was pious by nature. Everything in terms of punya was his. Punya meaning piety. But one day he happened to see a Shudra Shudrani, low class couple, in sexual embrace. And, you know, unfortunately in Kali Yuga, these types of sights, although we don't want them, they can reach our eyes. Anyone who has ever, you know, used the internet knows that very well. The internet is just a spider web of, you know, these links, and sometimes totally unwanted, then some very nasty image will suddenly appear on the screen. So, but also in real life. And so what happened to Ajamil is just by seeing that, he was so innocent, you know, and pure and good, that it sort of worked against him, because he wasn't prepared for this. He wasn't, he saw this and he was astonished, what is going on here? And he just kept looking and looking and looking. What is this? What does this mean? And then his mind got sucked into it and polluted. And then as a result, he gave up his nice, respectable position in Vedic society and became a total debauchee. So that story is well known. So, in spite of his strict performance of brahminical duties, sinful desires remained in Ajamil's heart. That's the point. It was possible for that to happen because deep within there were these bija, these kama bija, these seeds of desire that were not being addressed even by his brahminical activities. They were not being purified. Later, the simple devotional service of chanting Narayana uprooted all his calamities. Although he was in the midst of extremely severe sinful activities, Vedic rituals like charity and austerity can neutralize sinful reactions, but they cannot neutralize sinful desire. Srila Prabhupada gives two illustrations. One, a person may be cured of venereal disease by some painful medical treatment, but because sex desire remains in his heart, he again implicates himself in suffering. In other words, he again becomes attracted to the same activity and again catches the same disease. Or two, an elephant may carefully bathe in a lake, but upon returning to the land, immediately covers himself again with dirt. Devotional service can uproot even sinful desire and is therefore the best method for attaining relief from suffering. The root cause of suffering is avidya, ignorance of one's true identity as Krishna's eternal servant. In ignorance, one acts as an enjoyer and suffers the concomitant reactions. Srila Prabhupada says, as long as one is ignorant about his identity, he is sure to act wrongly and thereby become entangled in material contamination. That's from Nectar of Devotion, very early, page 8. There are different editions of Nectar of Devotion now, so I'm not quite sure now what edition page 8 refers to. Uprooting ignorance is the best way to uproot suffering. Only devotional service can uproot all ignorance. Srila Rupa Goswami authenticates this by quoting Padma Purana and Srimad Bhagavatam 4th Canto. Srila Prabhupada summarizes the quotation from Padma Purana this way, that pure devotional service in Krishna consciousness is the highest enlightenment, and when such enlightenment is there, it is just like a blazing forest fire killing all the inauspicious snakes of desire. This is also from page 8 of Nectar Devotion. In this quotation, Srila Prabhupada expresses the Sanskrit word avidyam as desire. One usually translates avidyam as ignorance. Accordingly, Srila Prabhupada clarifies, similarly, the blazing fire of Krishna consciousness is so strong that the snakes of ignorance are immediately killed. Devotional service eradicates sinful reactions, nullifies sinful desires, counteracts material proclivities, and most importantly, uproots ignorance. Therefore, it is the only efficient and effective way to achieve permanent relief from all suffering. In Srimad Bhagavatam 5.25.8, we find the phrase anadi kala karma vasana grahitam avidyamayam hridaya grantim. Anadi kala means from time immemorial. Karma vasana means the desire for fruitive activities. And gratitam means tied tightly. Avidyamana means consisting of the illusory energy. Hridaya grantim means the knot within the heart. There are many verses in Srimad Bhagavatam about the severing of the hard knot within the heart as the final stroke of liberation for the soul. Among them, 1.2.21 and 11.20.30 are oft-cited. In Srimad Bhagavatam 5.25.8, it is made clear that this hard knot is the beginningless susceptibility of conditioned consciousness to the influx of vasana. This verse further makes clear that hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord in constant remembrance of Him is the only process by which consciousness can be purified so that vasana can no longer penetrate. Therefore, the Lord, among the thousand names of Vishnu, He has the name Nadya, to whom one is always being offered prayers. In other words, one whose glories are always being chanted. So if we take up the position of one who is always hearing, chanting, and remembering the glories of the Lord, then we too will become blessed by His mercy in the form of the stemming, the complete stemming of these, the influx of these vasanas, these uncontrollable material desires. About this state of purified mind, Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport to Srimad Bhagavatam 4.29.69, quote, in Brahma Samhita 5.54, it is said, karmana nirdahutti kintu cha bhakti bhajam. When a person is fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness, his stockpile of material desires is minimized. Indeed, the desires no longer fructify in the form of gross bodies. Instead, the stockpile of desires become visible on the mental platform by the grace of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. No living entity is free from the cycle of birth and death unless he takes to Krishna consciousness. Therefore, in this verse, it is clearly stated, sattvika nishte, that when one is fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness, in one stroke, he is freed of past and future material mental desires. Then, by the grace of the Lord, everything becomes simultaneously manifest within the mind. In this regard, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur cites the example of Mother Yashoda's seeing the whole cosmic manifestation within the mouth of Lord Krishna. By the grace of Lord Krishna, Mother Yashoda saw all the universes and planets within the mouth of Krishna. Similarly, by the grace of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, a Krishna-conscious person, can see all his dormant desires at one time and finish all his future transmigrations. This facility is especially given to the devotee to make his path clear for returning home back to Godhead. In his purport, Srila Prabhupada explains that a pure devotee is released from the reaction of stockpiled material desires through dreams. Quote, Why we see things not experienced in this life is explained herein. That which we see is the future expression of a gross body, or is already stocked in our mental stockpile. Because a Krishna conscious person does not have to accept a future gross body, his recorded desires are fulfilled in a dream. We therefore sometimes find things in a dream never experienced in our present life. So I want to stop here just to explain that what was being explained in these last few sentences, few paragraphs, is the stage of Vasudev Sattva or Chetragya. To become the knower of the field of activities means to see everything. You see, right now we are not seeing everything. We gave a couple days ago the diagrams of the evolution of consciousness from Paramatma and the time factor and the Atma and Svabhava and Karma and Prakriti and then Ahamkara, the first manifestation of Ahamkara, then three kinds of Shaktis which evolve into three kinds of Ahamkara under three modes, and then out of that comes the mind and the Jnanendriyas, the Buddhi and the Karmendriyas, and the sense objects which are in the mode of ignorance. So that is a total scheme of the coverings, and we are seeing so little of that. You see, we're practically just seeing the effect of that. So when one becomes Chetragya, one sees everything. One sees all of these constituents, the demigods who are controlling these different phenomena, the energies, this Jnana Shakti, Dravya Shakti, Kriya Shakti, the Paramatma. This is called Adhoksa Jagyan, to actually see the Paramatma and his energies, the time energy. One knows oneself to be Jiva. One sees Prakriti as the energy of the Lord. And moreover, one sees, as Prabhupada mentions here, the entire stockpile of desires. And by seeing them all, what does that mean? One is seeing them all in relationship with the Lord. So one is realizing that all of this is the energy of the Lord, and it's only possible for all these desires to be satisfied by the Lord. So therefore one is, like Krishna says, aham savasya prabhava mattak sarvam pravarta timatva bhavanti mam buddha bhava samamvita, that everything comes from me. You see? This is what one sees at this, in this position of wisdom, that everything is flowing from me without exception. And the wise who know this, the wise who see everything, including every desire, conscious or subconscious, who sees everything coming from me, then they engage themselves completely in my devotional service. Buddha Bhava Samanvita Bhava, with great enthusiasm, or with ecstasy, with great one full attention. Prabhupada sometimes translates it with complete attention, complete mindfulness. They engage themselves in devotional service. So this is the meaning of Chetragya. This is what one experiences. This is when one actually comes to the Vasudeva Sattva. Alright, so we have to stop here today. And tomorrow we will speak, we'll speak about the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra in this connection. And the how the chanting will rid the soul of these coverings. All right then, we still have about a minute and a half. Are there any questions? Yes?
Raja, I'm just thinking about this example that you were giving about the fish.
Mm-hmm.
And this chart that you have here, Is it for the residents of the dawn, there's some adjustment to this kind of action and reaction?
Yeah, for the residents of the dawn, Srila Prabhupada says that if they commit sinful activities in the holy dawn, then they do have to accept the reactions of those sins, which may mean even taking a lower birth. But because they are Dambasis, that means if they have left that human body in which they committed the sinful activities while within the Dham, then their next birth may be that of a monkey or a hog or something appropriate to whatever sinful activities they've done. But then, because, you see, a lower creature, an animal, it's only the human being who performs karma in the sense of actions that breed reactions. Animals, and also demigods too, they're living out their reactions. You see, a demigod in heaven is living out his punya karma. He's done good karma as a human being. So he's gotten a big bank balance, and he's gotten a nice, debit card or credit card, whatever you want to call it. And he's sent to heaven, go ahead, have fun, you see. So he's up there spending. But sooner or later it all runs out. And when it runs out, down he must come again. You see? But it can take millions of years before it runs out. So in his, because in heaven, sense gratification is it's allowed. It's part of, it's part of the scene there. So only if one is committing some transgression, some offense, then one may be cursed. That happens up there. But it's not karma. It's just that one offends, like Nala Kubera Manigriva, they offended Narada Muni, so he cursed them to become trees. So that's different than karmic reaction. Otherwise, if they could have gone enjoying as they were enjoying, if they just behaved properly in front of Narada Muni, there's nothing against them being in the Nandanandana gardens and enjoying the beautiful apsaras. That's what happens up there. And similarly in animal life also, you see a tiger, a dog, they're meat-eating creatures. There's no sinful reaction for their eating meat. So if one becomes a dog or whatever in the holy dham, and then he lives out that life free of sin, and then he can go back home, back to Godhead. So that's the adjustment. Alright, so we stop here. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Sutra Maharaj ki jai.